Hello, survivalists. This is the Crux True Survival Podcast. I'm your host, Casey McIntosh, and my co-host here is with us, Julie Henningsen. She's going to be leading the story for us today. How are you doing today, Julie?
Great, Casey. I'm happy to be here and share a story with you that maybe you're already familiar with. It was new to me, but it's a good one. We're going to journey back to the late 19th century and talk about the tragic tale of the Johnstown Flood. This is also known by many as the Great Flood of 1889. And as I was researching this, I thought to myself, I'm surprised I don't already know about this. It sounds like a pretty big historical event. Growing up on the West Coast and the Rocky Mountains, not being geographically close to Pennsylvania, where this occurred, it made me think that, well, maybe I'm just not in the loop. So I'm curious, Casey, have you ever heard of the Great Flood of 1889?
I have never heard of the story, but it sounds like I should have at one point or another.
Well, I just felt like I should have. It just sounded like such a big deal. So I'm going to apologize in advance to all the Pennsylvanians about probably some mispronunciation of town names and things that I'm not familiar with, but the story is pretty riveting. So we're going to explore the events that led up to a devastating natural disaster. And as we like to do on the Crux, the highlight of the story is going to be about the unlikely survivors of this event. So our story begins on Friday, May 31st, 1889. And I'll just tell you a little bit more about the area. Johnstown, Pennsylvania is a town that was a thriving industrial community at this time. It was known for its steel production. There were steel mills and some other industrial activity going on there. Population of about 30,000 people. And the town is located along a river, which is an extensive drainage basin from an uphill plateau, miles and miles of watershed ending up draining into this basin. And some of the industrial activities in the area had included or involved dumping slag and waste along the riverbank. Years and years, or perhaps decades and decades of that, had made the river valley even more narrow and more vulnerable to flooding.
So what you're also saying is that the water quality there is awesome.
Good question. It must have been pretty good because about 14 miles upstream of Johnstown was a big reservoir that was held in place by the South Fork Dam. And the reservoir at this time was being developed by a bunch of wealthy speculators to be a private resort for hunting and fishing.
Oh my gosh. Hunting and fishing club.
Yeah. So at least we knew it was good fishing up there. So the water quality was good enough to keep fish alive at this point.
They were just getting their water from higher above. They were probably not drinking the water that was the runoff of all the factory goo.
Well, actually, the town of Jamestown, Pennsylvania, their primary water source was this lake, this reservoir that was created by the dam. So yeah, they had decent water quality, despite the likely industrial waste that was being poured into the waterway. Or at least they thought they did. Who knows?
Yeah, it's because people didn't know at that time that disease traveled in water.
Right. Right. Okay. As I said, upstream, uphill of the city, 14 miles, was this South Fork Dam. And the dam itself was built in the early 1800s. It created this lake. Here's where I'm going to probably mispronounce it. Lake Conemaugh, or maybe it's Conemaugh. But at this time, Lake Conemaugh was being developed as this private resort. And one of the primary investors in this project was Andrew Carnegie. Big money, Pennsylvania money, industrial money, Carnegie Steel. And this was becoming one of maybe the first playgrounds for the rich, the industrial wealthy. Throughout the process of developing this reservoir, certain alterations were made to the dam, including things like lowering the height of the dam and tweaking things here and there. And some of these alterations had unknowingly compromised the structural integrity of the dam.
This sounds like just a setup for disaster already.
Oh, it is an accident waiting to happen. Yeah, tale as old as time.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. So that brings us to the morning of May 31st, 1889. And in the recent days, a day or two before this time, the whole area had experienced this just unprecedented rainstorm, rainfall up to 6 to 10 inches, falling in just a 24-hour time period. So this was happening everywhere, in the reservoir, in the town surrounding, and it was just a major dump of water. As the water levels in the reservoir rose close to the crest of the dam, people started to realize, whoa, we might be in trouble here. So they mobilized and got together and worked on trying to dig ditches or drainage ways or do whatever they could, reinforce the dam to try and prevent imminent tragedy that they saw coming probably 24 hours in advance.
Julie, did they evacuate anyone? Did they move anyone out of town? Because that would be my first thought. Like, why are you digging these ditches? Just leave.
Right. Remember, in 1889, there was pretty unreliable communication system. So to answer your question, yes, by horseback, word was sent to the town below, the towns, multiple towns below, that, hey, this isn't looking good. And the story goes that the message was never received, or it didn't make it all the way to the town, because it was like the boy who cried wolf, that there had been many times in years before where people thought, oh, the dam's going to break, or we're going to have a flood through the river valley here. And warnings were sent out and people got the warnings, and then nothing ever came of it. In this particular instance, they didn't think that the warning was even worth passing along. So they tried, but message was not received.
Or the message giver went to the bar and never came out.
Exactly. That's what it sounds like. That's what it sounded like happened. It just dwindled. It left the dam, headed downstream, and then dwindled at a bar somewhere.
I mean, let's be honest. That's what happened.
Yeah, that's very likely what happened. So this team of people are busting their backs trying to stave off tragedy, knowing their efforts are feeling a little bit futile. And they finally just sort of gave up around 1:30 in the afternoon, and they just sat back and watched and waited and hoped. And sure enough, about an hour and a half later, at 2:50 p.m. that day, the dam breached, and bam, it released 3.8 billion gallons of water downstream. That's 20 million tons of water. Just broke the dam.
It's hard to even envision that volume of water.
Oh, yeah. It was a lake. The lake was about 2 miles long and 1 mile wide. And near the dam end of the lake, it was 60 feet deep. The dam itself was 72 feet high, which means it only rose 12 feet before it crested the dam. But yeah, big body of water just pouring down this narrow river canyon. It only took 65 minutes for the entire lake to be completely drained.
I was just picturing all these men like sitting around watching the water levels go up and up. I don't know if that's what they were doing. What else can you do?
Oh, no, those guys were above it. So when it happened, I mean, they were out of harm's way. They just watched it drain and probably just imagined with horror what was happening downstream. So about the same amount of water that goes over Niagara Falls in 36 minutes drained out of this reservoir total. If you've been to Niagara Falls and you know how big and fast moving and expansive.
How long did it take for all of the water? You said 65 minutes for the water to leave, completely empty it out.
Yep, completely empty out the reservoir.
The big bathtub.
Big bathtub. The flood is taken off down the mountain. It takes out the towns of South Fork. These are smaller towns. South Fork, Mineral Point, East Conemaugh. Takes out the town of Woodvale, which in Woodvale, it hit a facility called the Cambria Iron Works and picked up miles and miles of barbed wire and railroad cars. It's picking up houses, trees, animals. And when all was said and done, it picked up all the topsoil and everything on top of it down to the bedrock in these towns. So it was just grabbing and going. By the time it reached the bigger town of Johnstown, Pennsylvania, it was described as a wall of debris. It hardly even looked like water at that point because there was so much debris in it. And the force of the flood had a flow rate exceeding 420,000 CFS, cubic feet per second, which is extreme.
It probably looked like lava coming down from a volcano. It looks slow, but it's moving fast.
Yeah, exactly. Moving fast, but hard to identify as water because there was so much debris in it. It took 57 minutes from when it busted through the dam to reach the town of Johnstown. And that wasn't enough time in those days to get word out. So many of the residents were caught off guard by this just wall of water that was coming at them 40 miles an hour. And heights up to 60 feet high of this chunky water coming at them.
That's terrifying.
Terrifying, yeah. They just look up. They're caught off guard in their homes or at work, just going about their day. So here comes the water, picking people up, knocking structures over. There was a large kind of a arched stone bridge in the center of town of Johnstown that the water, you know, slammed up against, and it temporarily slowed the flood. It was a big obstacle. So some of the people who had been washed downstream and were still trying to stay afloat became trapped in the debris that built up at this bridge. And then, to make matters worse, this debris pushed up against the bridge caught fire, and a big inferno developed in the middle of the flood. Hard to imagine fire and water, but there was enough flammable material that the water couldn't put it out. And many people, at least 80 people, perished in this burning debris pile.
Oh, gosh. Picture how many people are in the water at that point. Probably a huge number.
Yeah, I mean, hundreds.
All of them.
Right. Yes. Well, not all of them. That's the highlight of the story, is going to be these miraculous survivors.
I was just thinking about what you want in your vicinity if this thing came for you. Like a submarine? I can't think of really you would want to have.
I don't know. Just like a hot air balloon, maybe? Something to just lift you straight up.
Right.
Yeah. So a lot of the people, once they realized what was happening, you know, chaos broke out. People started to see what was going on. Most of them went in their homes and just went up to the attic or the second floor as high as they could get in their homes, or on their roofs, or climbed on the roof of the barn. So instead of like trying to run out of town up the hillside, they're trying to get on top of their structures, which worked for them. In the end, the death toll from this flood was calculated to be originally 2,209 people. Wow. Out of a town of 30,000, some of those deaths were from other surrounding towns, but most of them, the vast majority, were Johnstown, Pennsylvania. This particular disaster, the largest loss of civilian life in the U.S. at that time. Since then, it's been surpassed by both a hurricane in 1900 in Galveston, and again with the September 11th attacks, surpassed that number. So that's why I thought, gosh, why haven't I heard of this? In the aftermath of this, bodies were found as far away as Cincinnati, Ohio, which is, you know, hours drive away, very far away. I don't know the exact mileage, but really far. And sometimes these bodies were found years after the event. Bodies were found as late as 1911, almost, you know, 15 years later. Thousands of people were left homeless. Property damage amounted to $17 million, which in current dollars would be about $550 million. And that actually doesn't, I would have guessed more.
Probably people also didn't have things like vehicles, and probably their homes were pretty
simple,
basically built.
Yeah, that's a good point. So some statistics that highlight the details of this tragedy. 99 families died, including 396 children. 1,600 homes were destroyed. 4 square miles of downtown Johnstown were completely destroyed. And then kind of an interesting fact about this is the American Red Cross, which was founded and led by a woman named Clara Barton, had just been organized a few years earlier, and they showed up 5 days later, led the disaster relief effort. That was one of the first major Red Cross disaster relief efforts in history. So I mentioned that the death toll was originally thought to be 2,209 people, but there was a man who was presumed dead named Leroy Temple that sauntered into Johnstown 11 years later. And he revealed that he had kind of pulled himself from the flood debris at the bridge before the fire started and walked out of the valley that day. and then moved to Massachusetts for a while and then decided to come back. So after the revelation of his survival, the death toll was lowered to 2,200.
He was like, please take me off the death list.
Get me off the list.
I'm still here.
And that, his story brings us to the other stories of survival that kind of emerged in the days and weeks and months after this event. And a great resource, if this is of interest, is the Johnstown Area Heritage Association. That group held some pretty compelling survival stories from this event, which I'll share.
Did you find any statistics about the number of animal deaths there were? I would imagine that there was a lot of livestock.
There was probably more animals than humans, honestly. Yes. I did see reference to animals being swept away, but no numbers. So the first story is of Victor Heiser. At the time, Victor was a 17-year-old, and he was there with his family, and he was out working in the field, and he glanced up and saw his father in the window of the house. And his father was gesturing frantically for him to get up on the roof of the barn. So he figured out what was going on. He climbed up on the roof and he witnessed this like wall of debris coming towards them. He barely escaped, but his home just crumbled before his eyes as he stood on the roof of the barn. He was swept up in the flood and rode the wave downstream. And then miraculously, he landed on the roof of a 2-story brick house and was able to get into the house where there were about 19 other people trying to ride out the event. So he hung out with them and survived. His parents, who he was home with at the time, did not survive. And they had a store on Main Street downtown that was also lost to the flood. But the interesting thing to know about Victor and his survival is that he went on to become a physician. And he later was credited with saving over 2 million lives by coming up with this novel treatment for leprosy at the time.
What? That's crazy.
Yeah. So over 2,000 people lost, but over 2 million people saved because Victor Heiser survived.
That's so cool.
I'll share is that of the Waters family. Mr. and Mrs. George and Belle Waters. They lived in Jonestown. And they heard a neighbor screaming and started to quickly move all of their important belongings to the second floor of their home, including their 3 daughters. They also had a son, but he was visiting a neighbor, so he wasn't home at the time. Then they climbed up a ladder into their unfinished attic that didn't even have floors, so they had to stand on the joists of the attic. And as the water rose, they were just struggling to maintain their balance on these attic joists. And in melee, Belle, the mother, who was clutching baby Eva, fell off the joists kind of through the ceiling and was submerged in a room below. And then the other 2 daughters, who were children, fell into the water as well. So this is seeming like all is lost. But George, he sees these 2 feet floating near him. He's still up on the attic joists. So he reaches down and grabs the 2 feet, thinking that he's grabbing, you know, one of his daughter's 2 feet. And he pulls the feet up and turns out he has 1 foot from each daughter. So he lifts both of the daughters out of the water and places them, you know, back on the joist. And then he uses the ladder to climb down a submerged room. And he found his wife, Belle, and baby Eva and kind of drug them up to safety. And they all survived. The floodwaters started to recede.
Wow.
And they all made it out alive. And the icing on the cake is that their son, Merle, also survived at the neighbor's house next door. So they beat the odds on that one. And they later rebuilt their house on that same site.
And they threw a big party every year on that day.
Big party.
It was a miracle that they were alive.
Yes.
You know what I keep thinking about as you're describing these situations is, at that time, how common was, did people know how to swim in the 1800s? Were there swim lessons? Were these people capable of swimming? Because I wonder how many people just died because they couldn't keep themselves afloat.
Yeah.
They didn't know, you know
Good
what I mean?
Question. Yeah, I'm sure not in the numbers of, or the percentage of people who can swim today. And then I think about that barbed wire. There were a lot of people that were just caught in miles of barbed wire in the water.
That's terrible. Or you might end up with the cow's hoof in your face or something like that.
Right.
Or any other number of sharp objects.
Yeah, hazards. Exactly.
Heavy objects. Yeah.
So an interesting side note about the Wadley, Belle preserved the dress that her 5-year-old daughter, Mary, was wearing that day. She washed it and ironed it and, you know, tried to clean it, but it still had this like permanent Ditz color stain to it from being in the dirty floodwaters. And now the dress is on display at the Johnstown Flood Museum.
Julie, I think that we should add Johnstown to our list of places that we need to visit.
For world tour. I do too. I want to go to this flood museum.
Yeah, it sounds so cool.
Okay, my last survival story, a group of 264 survivors, which all ended up in a building in downtown Johnstown called Alma Hall. It's a big brick building. It actually still stands today. It was the tallest building in the town at the time. So a lot of people thought, okay, let's go there. They went to the building, got to the top floor as high as they could, and it just kind of became a refuge for people to wait it out that night of May 31st. They had no dry clothes. They were all soaking wet, no food, no medical supplies, no light. They just sort of huddled together in the darkness of the top of the building every minute, fearing that the whole entire building was going to collapse and wash them away. So two of the folks that were included in that group of 264, one was a lawyer by the name of James Walter. And his interesting story is that he had been at home when this happened, and he was washed out of his home in the waters, being tossed and turned and thrown around. And then purely coincidentally, he was thrown through the window of Alma Hall into his own office. So the flood carried him from home to work, and they plopped him right in his office. So he climbed up to that floor and survived.
That is crazy. He's like, I guess the universe is telling me that I had some unfinished business to complete in my office.
Right. And then Dr. William Matthews was also being tossed around in this flood and somehow made it to Alma Hall. He had two broken ribs, but not only survived through the ordeal, he was instrumental in tending to a lot of people's injuries and wounds. And over the course of like the day or two surrounding when this all happened, he delivered two babies amidst the chaos that were born in the midst of this flood.
Aside from this being just a horrible experience, the thing that I could think of that would make this worse is if you happen to be in labor on the same day.
Oh gosh, that's what I thought too. Exactly.
That would be hell.
The fact that there were two flood babies that lived to tell, that's amazing.
I'm curious about all of those debris and how much got buried. And I'm sure that there are plenty of historical treasures still underneath the ground in that area of Pennsylvania to this day.
I'm sure there is. You know how it really took them years and years to rebuild, but they did. They even rebuilt the steel mills, and all of the industry continued. And Alma Hall still stands today. It's a historic landmark in downtown Johnstown. So when we do our road trip, Casey, not only will we go to the Flood Museum, but we'll go to the top floor of Alma Hall.
And all the people that are working in there are going to be like, what the hell are you people doing here?
Exactly. They're going to be like, what? You've never heard of the Johnstown Flood? The Great Flood of 1889? What rock did you crawl out from under?
So what happened to the dam? I'm sure they rebuilt that with some greater safety measures.
That is a great question. There was a big investigation that was done, and like all the secrecy around what the engineers determined, and actually a lot of lawsuits from victims and survivors to the hunting and fishing club because they had lowered the height of the dam, basically trying to, you know, find liability for the accident. And it was determined through, well, who knows? Andrew Carnegie was involved, so he's probably pulling some strings. But it was determined that the flood would have happened no matter what, whether the dam had been altered or not. So there was no compensation paid to the victims and the survivors. And it actually, the legal aspect of it, I think, kind of set up some precedent for future natural disaster type lawsuits. So that's a good question. What is the South Fork Dam? Does it exist today? What does it look like? So our listeners who are more familiar with this than we were before today, let us know. Send us a message. Send us a picture. We'd love to hear about this 135 years later.
So incredible.
So with that, Casey, we conclude our journey into the deep, debris-filled depths of the Johnstown Flood, a story that is a testament to the power of nature. We love our natural disaster stories here on The Crux. Before we would love to ask for your support to spread the word about the Crux True Survival Stories. If you enjoyed today's episode, let us know via Instagram at the Crux Podcast and share our latest posts on your stories. Help us reach more fellow survival enthusiasts and storytellers. Consider leaving a rating and a review on your favorite podcast platform and send us feedback. Let us know what you know about the Johnstown flood or other survival stories we've shared. If you have any survival stories you'd like to share with us, feel free to write us at thecruxsurvival@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you for your support.
Have a great week, everybody.